This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean County in Bloomington Normal, 88.3 FM in Pontiac, 97.1 FM in Lincoln, all around Central Illinois. We hope to have a great show for you today. Before we get started, I do want to talk about a glitch that I made on last week's program.
I forgot.
All the way through the program, I was talking about Zechariah being struck deaf. He wasn't, of course. He was struck dumb. And I don't know how I read that. I looked in my notes, and the word is dumb. Zechariah was struck dumb, then meaning he couldn't speak. And somehow I read that as deaf. And once, it seems like when you're on a radio program or you're talking or whatever, you say something and you keep on saying it all the way through and you don't even realize that you're saying it. It's sort of like, you know, how it is, Lynn, when you send an email to somebody and you read it a whole bunch of times, especially if it's a long one, and you don't see your mistakes in it because you read right into them. The words that you leave out. Yeah. And then somebody points it out to you, or you come back to it later on with a fresh look and you realize, how did I leave that word out? Or how did I say that? And you don't even realize that your mind just fills in the real word. And I think maybe that's what was happening. I was thinking in terms of actual speech, but I was saying deaf and it didn't work. So everybody out there, I do know that Zechariah was not struck deaf, that he was struck dumb, and apologizing for that glitch. What were you going to say, Lynn?
I was sitting here listening to you, and you know, I didn't even catch on, but I was wondering, which saint was that? Where did I miss? You know, I missed something in my reading.
Yeah, it's so easy to do. So I have a lot more. So, you know, it used to be when I heard somebody on TV or on the radio or something say something, you assume that they knew what they were talking about and they did it, you know, they were
intentionally.
Yeah, they did it intentionally and they simply did not know what the facts were. But I've learned to be much, much more patient and forgiving than I ever used to be, because it is so easy to do that, and especially when you're talking a lot. So at any rate, I hope that's cleared up. But I'm here again, as you heard, with my wife Lynn. And I know October, starting into October here, and that is Respect Life Month, October. So all of us as Catholics should be very aware of that. And there just is too much. There is, you know, the abortion going on in our world. So many of our cultural customs, our cultural beliefs and so forth are being lost, and it's something that we really need to be aware of. Also, I guess, you know, everyone knows, of course, by now that the president has come down with COVID-19 and is in Bethesda Maryland Hospital, and we should all pray for the president. I think no matter what side you happen to be on, he is the president of the United States, and we should hope for the best for all of our representatives. Again, Amy, I want to mention Amy Coney Barrett is being nominated for the Supreme Court. She's a very sincere Catholic person, and there's been a lot of sort of anti-Catholic comments made about her, and we should understand as Catholics that we should speak up, because it seems that being anti-Catholic from a certain point of view is one of the last permitted prejudices, and we should all be aware of that and speak up against it, regardless of whether, you know, what you think of Amy Coney Barrett. She should be seated or criticized or approved or disapproved based on her qualifications and her stand on the issues and so forth, not on the fact that she happens to be Catholic. So those are some things to keep in mind. And you were going to talk a little bit about angels. Is that it, Lynn, this morning?
Oh, yes. Well, the end of September, like the 29th of September was the Feast of St. Michael, St. Gabriel, and St. Raphael, the archangels. And then we jump into October, and we got the Feast of the Guardian Angels. How well do you know your guardian? My angel is not gardening. He's guarding me. He's got a job.
Well, maybe he's gardening, too.
Well, he'd have to because I can't. One time, Bob had to go to Texas for some training. He was gone 3 weeks, and he told me to weed the garden while he was gone. And the beans and stuff were just coming up. Well, I weeded the beans. There wasn't a bean left. So I've never gone back in the garden since. What a shock. He comes home. Where's the beans? I said, I weeded them. Oh, well.
And, of course, I was very forgiving.
Oh, yeah.
Calm.
Yeah, real calm.
Was not upset in any way at all.
No.
I remember that. Okay.
But anyway, the guardian angel, how well do you know yours? I call mine. I think his name is Charlie. He's pretty good. Pretty good with me. There's a big discussion within the circles whether you should name your guardian angel or not. There's two, you know, some say you should, some say you shouldn't. For me, I found it easier to tell Charlie, you know, I need help. And, you know, sometimes they do get that help. So they're there for other reasons. Also, October is the month of the rosary. Right now, there's the 54-day rosary going on. Will end on the novena will end on the 7th of October and the Feast of Our Lady of the Rosary. But we're also getting ready for the selection, and there are some sites on YouTube that carry on this novena for our country and for a peaceful election. And this will go to until election day. So you could begin today and say your rosary every day and follow it online. And I like the one from Our Lady of Fatima, the Rosary Crusade, and it's led by Father Pilleri, Pillari. He really sets the tone to put you in the mood for prayer. It's beautiful. So, you know, if nothing else, follow it and listen to him, and you feel at ease and feel very, very much a part of a group praying for the country. So wanted to bring that up. There are other sites, too, we can pick up the rosary. But this is a worldwide rosary. And he mentions people that have been part of it since the beginning. Makes you feel very at home. Very holy man. I think you would really enjoy listening and praying with him. Okay, Bob.
Okay, what we're going to talk about this morning, we've talked about it the last couple shows, really, to some extent, and that is we were talking about the nature of power. And I want to discuss that a little bit more, and there's an article in a book magazine that I subscribe to, Chronicles, a magazine of culture, and it is put out by the Rockford Institute and also what's the Charlemagne Institute as well. And so it leans heavily Catholic. The Rockford Institute does a lot of Catholics on its board. The magazine is not completely Catholic. It's about American culture. But the title is Up From Libertarianism. But it's talking about meeting power with power. And we talked about that. And the fact is that, you know, there is in our culture a movement, you know, that seems to be radical, secular, leftism or materialism, almost sort of atheism, this attack, it seems to be on America, that, you know, attack on our country, an attack on American institutions and values, and an attack on our history and on our past. And the nature of that attack is not just an argument. A lot of it has been translated into power. It's, in other words, a lot of our institutions are being taken down. We're talking about the pressing of the abortion movement. On a surface level, a lot of this is that radical, materialistic, secular liberalism society. But on a deeper nature, of course, as St. Paul said, we're talking about meaning our enemy is not flesh and blood, but its powers and principalities. And we're talking about the work, you know, of dark forces and Satan and so forth. And they are in every society. So the theme here is that every society needs to defend itself. I mean, any society that is going to be viable has to have institutions and mechanisms by which it defends its principles, its basic principles, and its basic culture against a social attack. And it can't be just an argument of ideas. That doesn't work against people who are intent on actually tearing down the culture and the foundations of society and replacing it with something else. So if a society is functional, and I think certainly ours has been, and Christianity itself has been, you know, a functional system all the way since the time of Christ, since the fall of the Roman Empire, up until now, and there, I've said there was always this balance of the church and the state, and by the two being a lot of times in opposition to each other, and then, of course, sometimes in working in conjunction with each other, it has provided the model that has built Western civilization. And if that model isn't defended, we tend to lose Western civilization, and things can degenerate very quickly and have in the past. If we look and see what happened in Mexico, look and see what happened in France with the French Revolution, and all throughout the world what happened in Russia. We've talked about that. A society, what's happened in Venezuela. A society can become very dysfunctional very quickly. And I think modernism, modern government, has not provided for those mechanisms of defense. So that's what we're going to talk about a little bit this morning. And we said earlier that which meets no resistance will not stop. And so we have this secular materialism, call it what you will, humanism, sort of an anti-Christian movement, anti-Catholic movement. We even get that, you know, you get it when Amy Coney Barrett has been nominated for the Supreme Court. It isn't only because she may not fit other people's idea of what she should stand for, but her Catholicism itself is being attacked. And so every society, we're saying, has to have its principles defended. I mean, every society has to decide the principles by which it will be governed. And those principles at bottom are always religious principles. Even if it's a secular society, the principles will be religious, and that's why secular materialism, even atheism, actually, in effect, is a religious movement as much as any other religious movement. And the principles that it rests upon are principles that are not found, you know, in nature or not found in the concrete world, those things that are called good or bad, or what should be pursued and what should not be pursued. Those are always, at bottom, religious principles. And if a society's principles aren't defended, and defended in with real power, not just with argumentation, that society can quickly become disrupted and dysfunctional. But so the nature of power, were you going to say something, Lynn?
I think in the case of Amy, what upsets people more than anything, this idea of the Catholic going to be there. There are other Catholics on the Supreme Court, but she belongs to a charismatic movement in the church, and they seem to be very fearful of this. And, you know, they're very effective against evil, the prayers that the charismatic people do. It's probably frightening to them.
Yeah, some of them have been calling it a cult, and actually they've been extending that meaning to be calling, in effect, Catholicism itself a cult. And, of course, if anything is a cult, it is the what I would call the leftist, secular, human, liberal forces that are at work in our society right now. They seem to be more of a cult than anything else, and they're at work all over the world. They've destroyed, you know, Russia. in the past, and also France, and for a long time, at least under the French Revolution, it degenerated to the point where Napoleon took over, and, you know, the history is there. The same thing happened in Mexico, and it can happen anywhere, and it can happen here. It's happened in Venezuela. All of these are this secular humanism or secular liberal movement. But so these movements are not just based on winning you over to their ideas. They are based on actual power plays set out to destroy the very culture that they are in and attacking and replacing it with their own, and doing so by exercising power. And if a society doesn't develop the mechanisms of power in order to stop something, then it won't stop. If it meets no resistance, it will not stop. And that resistance cannot be just some kind of an argument. It needs to be more than that. So I'm taking a lot of this from an article titled, Up from Libertarianism. And that article itself was based on an earlier article called Up from Liberalism, meaning that people are beginning to see that the whole modern idea of government and the modern idea of liberalism, even classical liberalism, which our country was pretty much based on, most conservatives concede that, they are sort of classical liberals, and conservatism is a form of liberalism itself, trying to preserve that particular classical liberalism that our country was founded on. It has a tendency not to develop the real mechanisms, the power to defend itself, and has its own principles often used against it in ways that actually destroy it and break it down and cause it cause a lot of liberal dissolution. So it is not effective in meeting a real attack of real power. And that's what we're talking about here. But at any rate, post-war liberalism, in this article it says, loses its appeal by around the turn of the century, by 2020 or maybe a little bit earlier than that. It begins to lose its appeal along near the end of the Bush term, during the financial crisis especially, because it's not really dealing with a lot of those problems. And so we'll go ahead and trace this dissolution of liberalism, the true liberalism, the liberalism that our country was founded on, the classical liberalism. And then there's this rise of libertarianism, a far more radical form of liberalism in many ways, or a radical form of conservative thought that rises for a while. And it also begins to lose its luster. And there is this movement of confusion as to not what, not knowing what to move to next. At any rate, we're going to stop at this point and take a break, and we'll come back with that theme and talk about it. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Here's an easy way to donate to Catholic Spirit Radio. As an Amazon shopper, you can donate 0.5% of your purchase cost to Catholic Spirit Radio, also known as 2820 Communications. Before making a purchase, you will always need to log into smile.amazon.com, search and select 2820 Communications, or choose this charity under account settings. Thank you for supporting Catholic Spirit Radio through 2820 Communications with your Amazon Smile purchase.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break. We're talking about the nature of power. We're talking about that which meets no resistance will not stop, and that every society, to be functional, needs to have a means of defense. And we're talking about the demise of the old liberal order, the classical liberal order, and the rise of more or less a sort of secular humanism, materialistic new form of liberalism, and that sort of took it over. And that is beginning to lose its luster, or was beginning to lose its luster by the turn of the century, and we're going to talk along those lines and talk about how the people move from one thing to another, and they're overlooking the traditional powers upon which Western civilization was built, and that is the church, the Catholic Church especially, because that's what the Western civilization was originally built on. The fall of Rome, the rise of Western civilization, based on the rise and power of the Catholic Church itself all over Europe, and Christianity in general as it carried on after the Reformation. So, at any rate, when this classical type of, or I should, liberalism was sort of watered down by this secular, you might say, liberalism or secular materialism, whatever you might want to call it, then there was the rise recently of libertarianism. Up until then, there was a lot of libertarian thought. And libertarianism is sort of a radical form of liberalism or conservatism, classical liberalism, you might call it that, in which the state itself is questioned, that maybe all our troubles are actually the fault of state power, and that the state is the enemy, and we should have the dissolution of the state and things taken over by the private sector, and maybe this would be the solution. But both liberalism, as I said, and libertarianism overlook traditional conservatism, that is the old conservatism, with a solid Catholic Christian base, you know, the ancient regime, the old order of Western civilization based on both the church and the state. And so libertarianism is losing its appeal, and people are looking around for something else, but we're forgetting where our tradition came from. And the idea of a state being built on intellectually perfect and ideologically perfect doctrine, according to the article here, is only of secondary importance to a workable society. That is, a society built and inhabited by the decency and quality of the people that build it. A society, in other words, is more like a family. It's not built on pure intellectual ideas that are put down on paper, and somehow or another, you know, we have to follow these to a T, radically follow those. Societies are usually built like a family, on loyalty, on love, on authority, and so forth. And they're not always perfectly rational or perfectly intellectual. In fact, actually, if we think about that, to be perfectly rational, you know, in other words, it is actually a form of insanity. When people who are insane are not really irrational. In fact, actually, all they have left is their rationality. They no longer have those nuances of feeling and of loyalty and all of the other, and religion, and all of the other things that go into making up a human being, or, and for that matter, a family, or for that matter, a state. And we should remember that our families and ourselves, our human beings, are not based strictly on some kind of an intellectual blueprint that we can write down and put down on paper. And a lot of modern government has come from that, the idea of a constitution and a document and following all kinds of principles and so forth put down on paper. That is not how Western civilization originally grew. It's far more organic than that. So that quality came from religious principles of those people that built Western civilization. It came from traditional Christianity. And men's natures are shaped and made workable by the belief, mores, and customs, you know, and culture of their society. They're not something that just is thought up in someone's head and then put down on paper. They grow over time and spring up from actual necessity and human feelings and the workings of neighbors and family and people interacting with each other by trial and error. So if those are functional, then society is functional. If not, then logic and ideology will not suffice. It will not replace that kind of thing. And again, pure rationalism is often very dysfunctional. And as I said, to be insane is to have only pure rationality left. And I think it was it Thomas Jefferson, Lynn, or Madison? I'm not sure which. I think it was Thomas Jefferson who bragged about the fact that the United States was not built on all of these religious principles and principles, you know, of that were vague, and principles of family and so forth, that the founders, Jefferson, Bragg, built their state, the modern state that we live in, America, as a carpenter would build a ship. But maybe that is not something to brag about, because, again, societies are more organic and they spring up from the actual quality of the people and how they react with each other. And that's far more important, and usually the religious principles that they hold are far more important than some blueprint put down on a piece of paper. So at any rate, when the real power in a real world is used against a functional society, that society must and does meet it with real power. And what the article is saying here is that this blueprint of a nation that we have, to a certain extent, often doesn't generate those mechanisms. It seems as if it meets, there's constantly this reference to this battle of ideas. And when the radical left, that is the secular, humanistic, materialistic side of liberalism, is arrayed against our nation, they are turning that liberalism against itself. It seems as if our conservatives and our classical liberals as well think that somehow or another their duty is not to oppose these people with real force, but their duty is to somehow win these people over to the classical liberal or conservative idea. But a society really, according to this article, can't function if it constantly has to argue for its own existence instead of taking its existence as a given and defending that existence, you know, with real power. And so this is what's happened here. And I want to read from something here in a book that I often refer to by Christopher Ferrara, Liberty, the God That Failed. And it's from one of our popes. And the idea of the modern state is being discussed here. And here's what the author of the book says, and then we're talking here, I think, about Pope Pius the 11th, I believe. It says, in sum, liberty has imposed upon Western civilization, and here we're talking about Pope Leo the 13th, I'm sorry, first, and then I think Pope Pius the 11th. It says, liberty has imposed upon Western civilization what Leo the 13th succinctly denounced as the new conception of law, which was not merely previously unknown, but was at variance on many points with not only the Christian, but even the natural law. This new conception of law expressed itself in the revolutionary principles that contemporary man, blissfully ignorant of his own Christian heritage, now unquestionably accepts as the received wisdom of the age. And we're talking about all of the things in the Constitution. There should be absolute free speech. There should be this idea of academic freedom, in which our schools, all the way from our grade schools to our colleges, are turned against the Western civilization and turned against America itself, that somehow or another all of these principles are somehow givens and they've never existed in the world before. He says, these are now unquestionably the received wisdom of the ages. And here's what they are: that all are equal in the control of their life, that each one is so far his own master as to be in no sense under the rule of any other individual. He's talking about here about what has become in this day and age radical materialism, you know, and radical individualism. He's saying that each is free to think on every subject just as he may choose and to do whatever he may like to do, that no man has any right to rule over other men, that the judgment of each one's conscience is independent of all law, that the most unrestrained opinions may be openly expressed as to the practice or omission of divine worship. and that everyone has unbounded license to think whatever he chooses and to publish abroad whatever he thinks. We take these as givens, but these are often used as in a war against our own culture. And mere argumentation against them isn't going to work. Trying to win people over to your idea when the people that are opposing you are not even interested in being won over to your idea, when they are interested in destroying the foundation of your civilization and replacing it with their own idea of a power state, you are not going to win a battle simply by a war of words or ideas. And this is what Leo XIII is getting at. And then Pope Pius XI goes on after this. Leo, just here, what I read was written at around the turn of the 20th century, back in the late 1800s, very early 1900s. And then about 1925, Pope Pius XI goes on and continues that same observation, and that these principles would destroy the foundation of our civilization was always self-evident. Only 40 years after Leo, Pope Pius XI observed that with God and Jesus Christ excluded from political life, with authority derived not from God but from man, the very basis of that authority has been taken away, because the chief reason of the distinction between ruler and subject has been eliminated. The result is that human society is tottering to its fall because it has no longer a secure and solid foundation. But perhaps not even Leo and Pius could have imagined the full extent of the civilizational debacle that this so-called new liberty has wrought. Not only the abortion holocaust, but an epidemic of divorce, the universal practice of contraception, the depopulation of Western nations, the relentless advance of homosexualism, the destruction of the family, the spread of orgiastic consumerism in a morally unbound free market, the debasement of art, the debasement of literature, music, architecture, and Western culture as a whole, and finally the emergence of a veritable neo-pagan social order in which resistant Christians increasingly face persecution for heresies against the orthodoxy of this so-called new and modern liberty. And not even the stoic virtues of the pagans of Greco-Roman antiquity are evident. So this is, according to the popes, is what is happening because we don't have a mechanism to deal with a power that is being arrayed against ourselves. So,
and what is that power?
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And power is what? It's the basis of everything, of society and everything. Power is God.
Well, it starts, that society.
It starts right there.
Based on God. We have a society that is based no longer on God, but is based on man.
Right.
And man somehow is the pinnacle of everything on the face of the earth. And according to the new philosophy, man can simply build a state out of whole cloth. That is, as Jefferson said, we didn't have a state grow up organically like it has in the past. We designed it like a carpenter would build a ship. But people, communities, families don't live and function on intellectual and ideological design defended by nothing but a war of words. They actually live in real societies that come about organically through trial and error, through the love of each other and family, through religious principles that have been laid down and passed on. We don't come into this world, you know, as a blank sheet, as John Locke said. We're not born blank sheets. We come into this world already with lots of givens, and then we're given even more of these from our families, from the society in which we live, and from the traditions that are handed down. If those are functional, the society survives. If they're not functional, all the pieces of paper in the world are not going to make them functional.
That's right. It's the beginning. Go back to the beginning, and you build a culture on truth, on God, and it will grow. It'll be very strong as long as you maintain that faith.
Again, when real power in the real world is used against a functional society, that society must meet it with real power. Winning a battle of logical ideas will not do, and it can't win over. Simply to argue for your existence is a failure. Any strategy that seeks to preserve freedom but ignores the law of power does not deal in political reality, and it will lose. And our enemies, that is the secular humanists, are winning the war because they don't just engage in a war of ideas. They engage in a real war of destroying the foundations of society.
Look, even God has his army of angels.
Liberalism, that is classical, conservative, libertarian, whatever you want to call it, in its essence, allows for its own subversion by its own principles. It fails to develop the authority and authoritarianism to design and build forces to oppose and destroy opponents who couch their attack in liberal propaganda. Secular material liberal humanism replaces the traditional culture with its own nihilistic, toxic, dehumanistic culture of pure power, while so-called classical liberals and libertarians try to win it over to their side with a battle of ideas, constantly arguing for their principles rather than actually using real power to defend their principles. All the idea tactics of classical liberalism have been captured and used by the radical left to disarm liberalism. We're going to have to stop right here and take a break, so stay with us. We'll come back and finish this up.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Here's an easy way to donate to Catholic Spirit Radio. As an Amazon shopper, you can donate 0.5% of your purchase cost to Catholic Spirit Radio, also known as 2820 Communications. Before making a purchase, you will always need to log into smile.amazon.com, search and select 2820 Communications, or choose this charity under account settings. Thank you for supporting Catholic Spirit Radio through 2820 Communications with your Amazon Smile purchase.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're talking about the nature of power and how every functional state has to develop the real mechanisms of power to meet real power that is arrayed against it. And if it fails to do so, that state will probably eventually fail and be dissolved or deconstructed. And a new power can be built over on a new foundation. And so this is one of the problems of classical liberalism, conservative libertarianism. The idea that somehow or another you can defend the state or overcome your enemies by pure argument. Somehow you're going to win them over to your side through arguments. But when real power is arrayed against it, that power is not interested in being won over. It's interested in winning. And how is that done in the modern state? It is done because the tactics of classical liberalism have been captured and used by the radical left to disarm liberalism. And how it's done like this, thusly. Here is what the powers arrayed against classical liberalism do. They, in effect, assert, when I am weaker, I ask for free speech and a hearing, because those are your principles, that is, the principles of classical liberalism, and you grant them to me. Then when I am stronger, I take away your speech and deny you a hearing because that is my principle. In other words, the principle of the powers that are arrayed against us are not interested in giving us the same free speech and the same principles that classical liberalism grants. And if it keeps on granting that and doesn't exercise real authority against those kind of powers, it will lose. You get a lot of this, and I'm not trying to pick on any one person, but if you watch Hannity on TV, for example, on Fox, he's always boasting that he grants speech and hearing and so forth to his enemies, and that they don't reciprocate, that somehow they should. But why should they? They're in a battle, a real battle, exercising real power to win. And, of course, if Hannity, in effect, grants them the free speech and so forth, he is expecting that somehow that will win out by itself. And real societies and so forth, according to this article in Chronicles, don't win that way and they don't operate that way. Real societies have real mechanisms to defend themselves, just as the popes tried to say, and where there is no, you know, authority and no defense against this. Then a society can endlessly argue its virtues and its values, and they will be destroyed because there isn't any mechanism for that society to actually use real power to oppose those people attacking them, because that society is hamstrung and tied up by its own principles, and those principles have been invented recently and by John Locke, Thomas Jefferson, and others who have laid out our country. They sound good on paper, but a lot of them don't work. And I'm not trying to declare that everything that was given to us by our founders is bad, but there are some things that need to be corrected. So let's take a look at early traditional Catholicism. When the Rome fell and it developed a new state, what did it do? Classical liberalism paved the way for the radical left by insisting that free speech and tolerance are the epitome of Western civilization and could be fairly used to oppose even the Christian restrictions on human behavior upon which culture, Western civilization and culture was built, allowing classical liberals to be, in effect, hoist on their own petard, as it would say in Shakespeare. In other words, again, that the enemies of are the modern state, the classical liberal state, are using classical liberal principles against them when it works, and then, of course, are not granting those same principles to the liberals opposing them when they get power. In other words, when they're on the inside, on the outside looking in, they demand free speech and a hearing and all of the so-called good virtues of classical liberalism. But once they're on the inside, you know, then the door is slammed and it's the end of free speech. In other words, free speech for me, but not free speech for thee. And the same thing with all the other liberal virtues. And unless there's a way to oppose that, a liberal society can find itself undermined and destroyed. For example, did not Paul himself say, you know, in the Bible, in Scripture, if anyone tells you things contradictory to what we have taught you, he's talking to Timothy, I think, and he's saying, look, if anyone tells you something that contradicts what we have said and what you have learned from us, even if they appear as angels of light, don't listen to them. In other words, Paul was saying they don't deserve to be heard. Do something against them. And the church did. The church had dogma, and it had defenses, and it used that dogma and those defenses to put down insurrections against itself and preserved itself and created Western civilization. For example, we in our modern state condemn the fact that the church had a list of forbidden books and certain ideas. There is the idea that authorities can give a hearing to people. But if those ideas and so forth clash with the basic principles that the society is built on, then once that hearing is given, those ideas have to be denied, and they have to be denied with force if necessary after that. Free speech is not unlimited, in other words. It has limits, and it needs to be controlled within those limits. At any rate, Catholic Christianity was not like modern classical liberal conservatism, for example. It did not allow its enemies to attack it. It did not apologize for developing mechanisms to defend itself. It didn't allow just any kind of free speech. It would give hearings, but after a hearing, you know, after something was heard and found to be in conflict or contradictory to the nature of the state or of Christianity itself, it disallowed that. And people who persisted in making attacks like that were put down physically. It had the Inquisition, and I know that is so much attacked, but the point is it often went in to make sure there was no unfairness on one side or the other, and it would give the other side a chance to state its case. And then if its case was denied, it would be told to come back into the church and obey the rules and regulations and principles of the state and the church. And if it didn't do so, there was punishments for doing that. It had defenders, for example, originally. It had Constantine, the Battle of the Milvian Bridge, which really established Christianity. Constantine was a Roman, but nevertheless, as Rome was beginning to dissolve and dissolution for some of the same reasons, because it was too diverse and it wasn't defending its ideas and its principles, it was being destroyed, and Christianity was rising and taking over. So there was that. There was the Knights Templar that were used to defend against encroachments of Islam. Charlemagne and his armies and so forth were used in the early church to defend against the East. In other words, the church was not afraid to use physical power in order to support and keep its institutions and ideas from being attacked and destroyed by enemies. And so if we don't find some way to do this in the modern state and do it in a way that's fair and principled, but nevertheless, in a way that makes sure that if a hearing is given and ideas are not in accordance with Western civilization's values and culture, then those ideas have to be put down and stopped. Any society can't allow what's been going on lately in the streets of the other side burning down, not getting its way, burning down buildings and destroying property and killing police and fighting against the police. There needs to be mechanisms in order to deal with this, and it needs to deal with this physically, not just with an argumentation that our ideas are better. Pagans claimed that Christianity weakened Rome, and that's why it fell, but that wasn't true. Actually, it was Christianity that restored civilization after Rome fell, and Rome weakened itself. It failed to defend itself against barbarians. It had a multicultural of diversity that became too multicultural, probably, and too diverse. And it had a variety of religions that were often not in conjunction with each other. And it had a lot of factions eventually against each other, and we're having a lot of the same things. And eventually states that do that and no longer defend themselves will fail. And so the church prevailed over out of this darkness that was falling on the world at that time because it had a dogma and it had a hierarchy and it defended itself. Like I say, Constantine, Charlemagne, the Knights Templar, it went on the Crusades to defend itself against Islam. It eventually threw Islam back as late as the 17th century, all the way in the 1600s. But it fought them and threw them back physically. So these are some of the things that need to be reestablished. Some of these, we cannot go on forever here saying that everyone has an unlimited right to free speech and then an unlimited right to protest. Even the peaceful protesters at some point need to be contained and not allowed to protest unlimitedly, disrupting traffic and disrupting people's lives, even if the protest is not violent. And this idea of absolute freedom and absolute radical individualism is not working. And there is even a return to paganism in some of the Scandinavian countries because people there are looking at the modern state and saying that it is not effective, that Christianity, they're blaming it on Christianity and saying that Christianity is not effective and they're returning to their old gods. And that's simply not true. We're overlooking the Christian paradigm and the Christian tradition where there was both the church and the state distinct from each other, but nevertheless working together on certain things and opposition in other things in order to provide a a hierarchy and a dogma and rules and regulations for living in a state, and with the willingness to defend itself both physically as well as intellectually. And also, Christianity grew more organically. It didn't. It wasn't something laid out on a piece of paper with everything written down in advance. It grew out of what Christ taught, and that was often man's, you know, family-centered and human-centered. So any state that fails to develop functional principles to live by and then fails to actually physically defend those principles becomes dysfunctional, and that's what I think this article is warning about. And I want to read something here from Pope Leo XIII again, that we've forgotten something, and unless we restore that, I don't think a modern state is going to survive. It says here, and this is by around 1874 by Pope Leo, it says, "Very many men of more recent times, walking in the footsteps of those who in a former age assumed to themselves the name of philosophers, say that all power comes from the people." And that's what we have the modern state being built on. "But from these, Catholics dissent." In other words, the Pope is saying, this is not the Catholic idea. All power does not come from the people. "Catholics affirm that the right to rule is from God, as from a natural and necessary principle." And I think all Christians would assert that as well. You know, our Protestant friends would say the same thing, that the right to rule and the power to rule is ultimately first from God and only from the people in the secondarily form. So all power does not come from the people, and that's exactly what our enemies of our present state say. You see them saying it all the time. Sometimes they write the slogans down on walls and so forth, "Power to the people," or "All power is from the people." And that simply is not true. All power does not come from the people. And allowing that is what's allowing our state actually to be destroyed. But this goes on. It says, Leo II made short work of Locke's nonsensical social compact, according to which the subjects are the rulers and the rulers are the subjects. This idea that the people rule themselves and at the same time that they are the rulers and the ruled, that is also a contradiction in terms. That is not how a state operates or can operate. It would be like saying the prisoners in a prison system are the ones who put themselves in jail and also the ones who decide when they're when they can go free. And it simply doesn't work that way. It sounds good, but that's not the way life works in reality. So, and he went on. He says, "It is plain, moreover, that the pact which they allege is openly a falsehood and a fiction, and it has no authority to confer on political power such great force, dignity, and firmness as the safety of the state and the common good of the citizens require." In other words, the consent of the people is not enough. A society that's not based on a hierarchy starting from God will fail. He says, then, when you have that is God in his proper place, then only will the government have all those ornaments and guarantees when it is understood to emanate from God as its august and most sacred source. And there's where, you know, Catholicism comes in. So this is what the gist of the article is. And again, a modern state that we have today, the type of modern state that we have, if it does not develop mechanisms to deal with both verbal attacks, in other words, should our schools be allowed to teach those things in the name of academic freedom that actually destroy the fundamental principles upon which our country was built? To have the right to teach our children that our history is wrong, that everything in the society is bad, and that the state itself and the functional government of the United States should be destroyed because that's a lot of what's going on in the name of academic freedom. Should that be allowed? And the answer is no, of course not. Every society has to decide the basic principles upon which it is built And those principles have to be defended both verbally, intellectually, and physically as well. And it has to develop those mechanisms which to do it. And part of that mechanism was, of course, the church itself enumerating those principles, enunciating those principles, and making them clear. And we need that again. And then the state itself developing the actual physical mechanisms in which to deal with that. And then having the will, knowing that those principles are the principles it has decided upon, holding to them and having the will to defend them physically as well as verbally. So that's basically what the article is saying. And I hope this sort of brings all of what we've been talking about in the last two or three shows together and makes it a little bit more understandable and clear. But unless we do this as a state, develop the techniques and the mechanisms by which to defend the principles upon which we're built, all the talk in the world and all the argumentation is not going to win the day. And I happen to agree with that article. I think it's right. It's time now to drop all of these ideas of perfect liberalism and perfect libertarianism and so forth and develop the fact that every state has to be functional just like a family does, and that is not based on intellectually and ideologically pure principles invented out of our own minds and set down on a piece of paper. It comes from going back to those traditions that have been handed down to Western civilization for over 2,000 years, emanating from God himself through Jesus Christ. And if we don't have some kind of a mechanism like that governing our society is going to dissolve. So, at any rate,
St. Michael the Archangel,
defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, O Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.